We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Brad Biggs is the football man from the Chicago Tribune. He is a longtime contributor to this station and this show, and certainly a dear and valued friend by all. By everyone who meets him. Big Z!
What's up, Brad?
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the Bears have a big football game. They start their march through the AFC East, and it begins down in Miami against a couple of guys that they know well, including one Dow Logans, who designs plays that win Super Bowls.
Sure.
Yeah, well, I don't know if he designed that one, but certainly
stole it.
Certainly got to it in the NFL before the Philadelphia Eagles did. No question about that. And one of the interesting subplots to this matchup is the Gase and Vic Fangio battle, and Dow, of course, is in that as well. And I had people ask me at the beginning of the week, you know, who would have the upper hand because they know each other so well. And I don't know that either guy is going to come away with the upper hand. But I can recall that when Adam Gase was with the Bears for that one season as offensive coordinator, I mean, he would tie himself in knots game planning to go against Vic in practice, okay, in the off season, that you know, Gase is ultra competitive, and he would look to gain an edge going against Vic, or try to anticipate a call by Vic and have the perfect play in place to defeat it. And I just remember meeting with him. It was in June, during the off-season program, and I got some time with him for a larger story that I was working on Gase, and so we probably talked for about 45 minutes, and you know, the first 10 of which was him decompressing over this you know, showdown he had with Vic's defense during the OTA. So that's going to be, I'm sure it's been fun for them, and you know, it gives you a little bit of insight in certainly Gase and how he approached that and the respect that he had for Vic.
I like Gase. I have a lot of respect for him, too, because he did a great job in 2015. He fixed Cutler for a season. And I think he made Jay Cutler an acceptable NFL quarterback. We're not going to revisit that one.
If acceptable means you need to replace him, yeah.
Okay, water under the bridge. We're not going to re-debate Cutler, all right? We're talking about Ryan Tannehill.
You brought it up.
Right?
You know,
because,
that's right, Mully. I mean, he brought it up.
Well, the impact that he has had on Ryan Tannehill is similar to the impact he had on Cutler. He has made him better. Tannehill is 12-6 in the last 18 starts under Gase. His quarterback rating, you know, in 18 starts under Gase is 93.4. That's really good. What do you have in Ryan Tannehill, though, really? And how vulnerable will he be against this Bears defense?
Well, what's the offensive line going to look like? You know, there's been some injury questions regarding the Dolphins' offensive line, and that'll certainly play a role in it. You know, he's got a collection of smaller, quicker receivers, the kind of guys that get open in short spaces, and so you can make those quick throws to those guys, right? We're not talking about, you know, his top receiver's a long strider that needs to get going downfield, so you got to block it up for him to deliver the ball. So I'm sure that Miami's going to be aware of the pass rush and what the Bears have in store for Tannehill and the offensive line, and I'm sure there's going to be a plan to get the ball out quickly. I mean, that's the number one way to frustrate and mitigate any pass rush is to not hold the football. So they've got to get it out quick.
When you look at these young quarterbacks, and I'll throw Mitch into the group, even though it's a little bit absurd, but when you talk about Mahomes and you talk about Goff and you talk about how good those teams have done, it seems like somebody at some point is going to start running the ball, holding on to the ball, just trying to get them out of rhythm, just trying to do something to interrupt the flow of those offenses. Is it going to happen here? Do you expect, given the injuries and given the Bears pass rush and all the rest of it, that Miami may, you know, throw a little bit of a surprise, a little spanner in the works and try to do something to work with the clock and try to do some other things? Or do you attack a guy like Mitchell Trubisky?
Well, I think the Dolphins would love to be able to run the football because it's supposed to be 86, 87 degrees on Sunday. I'm sure it'll be more humid than it's been around here, more humid than these players are accustomed to. And so that's potentially a factor for this game. And if the Dolphins can get on a roll running the football, although Kenyon Drake, I don't know that he's quite been what they were hoping for or expecting this season, but if they can run the football a little bit, that's a nice way to slow down any pass rush, a really good way to slow down any pass rush. So that's possible, but I just think the biggest emphasis for Miami's got to be getting the ball out quickly,
right,
to some of these, again, smaller, quicker wide receivers that they feature.
On the Bears offense, how do you expect and anticipate the touches being distributed between Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen?
I think Howard will probably get a little bit more volume this week. But if Nagy thinks that Cohen's the best matchup or a better matchup, you know, I don't see him going out of his way to try to, you know, appease Jordan Howard. If Jordan Howard feels like he needs to be appeased, you know, they're gonna do what they do. And I thought for a while that there would be a game where we'd see him really start to get Howard going, and maybe that happens here. You know, I'm not sure if they get a lead, are they gonna, you know, try to milk the clock, or are they just gonna keep the, you know, pedal to the metal? So a lot of people, it seems to be a ton of concern about Jordan Howard and his touches. Maybe some of that's fantasy football driven. I don't know, but as long as they're winning, Nagy's just going to go with what's working here.
Do you believe the layoff will have any effect? You know, it's interesting. Everyone's made a point about Andy Reid and his record, which is, what, 16?
Yeah, I mean, Andy Reid, though.
I was going to say,
Doug
Andy
lost his first game.
Andy is 2-2 in his last four, I believe. Andy, you know, since they changed where you can't have the extra practice time, Andy hasn't done as well as anybody else. It's more arbitrary.
Yeah, and you know, Andy's his own guy, and Matt Nagy's his own guy, so we'll see. It would be, you'd like to think that your head coach and the program you have in place gives you some type of, you know, extra advantage coming out of a week off, but what the Bears really do? I mean, they literally gave the players the entire week off, so, you know, unless they're able to better break down the film and scheme and prepare a game plan than most other guys with their extra time for the week. I don't know where the edge is. You know, the Bears were relatively healthy going into that bye. They're in that same situation coming out of it here on the back end. It's a little bit earlier than you would prefer a bye, but the league tries to balance these things out, and it had been quite some time since the Bears had had one early in the season, so they were due for one in week five, or perhaps even overdue. And now they'll get back to the march, which is four straight games against the AFC East.
This segment with Brad Biggs is brought to you by Bet Chicago. For betting and fantasy football coverage, download the app today and bet for free.
Brad, I've got Bears 27, Dolphins 19. I think they're going to use the running game. I think they're going to protect the football, and I think their defense is just going to be too overwhelming. What say you?
Yeah, I talked to a scout about a week and a half back and mentioned to him that the Bears had four straight coming up against the AFC East, and he said, well, who do they play in what order and where? And so I laid it out for him. And he thought, at that time anyway, that the Bears could potentially face a more difficult time against the Dolphins this Sunday than the following week when they host the Patriots.
Hmm.
Now, I don't know if he's perhaps shifted his thought since, but his point was that Miami's not a bad football team, and that playing down there is a slight advantage for the Dolphins, and his point was that this isn't the Patriots team that you're accustomed to seeing year after year after year with Bill Belichick. That being said, I picked the Bears to win. I think it'll be relatively close. I got 24-20.
Laramie Tunsil is back at practice. Is there not concussion protocol for a game?
No, he's been limited. It's part of the...
He's still in the protocol.
But they're not going to let him play, right?
We'll see.
Haven't we agreed on that? All right. Just double check it. All right, Biggsy, thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Brad.
All right, guys, have a great weekend.
That is our man, Brad Biggs, from the Chicago Tribune.
It is confusing, though. The concussion protocol includes actually practicing, I guess, to see where you are and how the effects are of the concussion.
All right, we're going to bring in Gordon Whitmire. We'll talk to him about Laramie Tunsil. No, we'll talk to him about Chili Davis, about Chili getting fired, and we'll ask him the same question we asked Peter. Is this the start of something big, or is that it?
What's next?
Are they done with the firing line, or could there be a surprise move of some sort?
Objection, leading question.
Okay, we'll ask the witness next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Like, we create the talent.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Gordon Whitmire covers the Chicago Cubs for the Chicago Sun-Times. And Gordon, Chili today, who's tamale, I guess, is the the only way to approach
morning,
it.
Morning, Gordon.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Is this a one-off? Is this a philosophical issue? What's your take on it? What's your read on this firing?
One-off. This is this will be what?
Yeah.
Six hitting coaches and... in 8 years for these guys. Well, my read is that this is a very aggressive front office when it comes to personnel changes on its field staff. And they tried something this year. Joe wanted a different kind of hitting coach and a different kind of approach. And they agreed that maybe their young hitters were ready for kind of a next step. And then it didn't work. You've got a couple of the veterans in particular worked real well with Chili, and a lot of the young guys didn't. They did just their styles didn't fit. Their development stage wasn't in the right place to be able to take this hitting to all fields approach and you know, less emphasis on the so-called launch angle and everything, and then still hit the home runs and still be the same hitters they are. So it was a miscalculation as much as anything. And so then now they're trying to recalculate back and see if they can find somebody that better fits these hitters.
So do they go back to the same philosophy?
I don't think he did a bad job.
No,
and my understanding is they don't either.
Do they go back to the John Maley type of thinking? Somebody like that? Certainly not him. He's with the Phillies. But is that the approach now? Does it matter what the approach is? At what point does it fall on the players?
Yeah. I think it's the players. I mean, I think this is all about the players. Look, if Chris Bryant isn't basically not Chris Bryant for two-thirds of the year, it's a totally different looking year. That included the entire second half, and that's when all the numbers team-wise dropped off. That's different. You've got just a handful of the young guys that still haven't quite proven they're quite as good as they've been professing they've been all this time. I mean, do we know... we have any idea what kind of hitter Ian Happ is going to be? Addison Russell was, you know, never mind the off-field problems when it comes to his hitting, he never proved he was a solid everyday major league hitter. You know, Schwarber had a nice season, despite, you know, like some people think he had a down year. But if you look at his overall numbers, he had an okay season, but he was platooned. You know, Almora faded in the second half. I'd say you have to, on balance, say that he had a pretty good season as a guy that played more than he had before. But none of these are, you know, you don't have, these guys aren't all Chris Bryant. These guys aren't all Anthony Rizzo. And so I think it's on them, really. And I really don't think it's going to matter what hitting coach you go and get. But they are going to try to go back to something more in tune with the style of hitters these guys are. And I don't know if that means going and getting a guy like Eric Hinsky, who was the assistant hitting coach before, you know, with Maley, before he went to the Angels, because, you know, they were social even. Who knows what's happening with that coaching staff. I'm not sure how fast this is going to happen.
What about how fast this happened? I mean, were you surprised there was a delay, supposedly a couple of meetings? How do we read what happened? Was it the players in the exit interviews telling them they're not comfortable? And then, I mean, I just am curious as to why it took, you know, 9 days.
Yeah, I think it was both, and I think they wanted to step away from this. It really, so 9 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, it was about a week, because this, he didn't get told yesterday. He got told maybe, my understanding is Wednesday. So it took about a week. So they were in the process of some of those interviews right away, and they probably had some decision-making to do. Again, I think if this was one of those things where they just flat thought he didn't do a good job, or that he wasn't getting along with people, or that it was just wrong all the way around, it would have been really quick. I think this was, I think they deliberated for a while on this, because he is a good hitting coach, because he knows what he's doing. It was a bad fit.
You know, you mentioned some veterans, and I think Hayward and Zobrist are guys who probably embraced everything Chili Davis had to offer. The younger players, some of their, you know, arrested development could be maybe attributed to this. And does it affect at all how they may view some of these younger players and their ability to maybe consider moving them, because they might be getting a guy who might be able to unlock or bring them back to where they were, you know, talking about Hap, maybe Schwarber, maybe Almora, maybe guys, maybe Addison Russell if he's still a Cub. Does it affect their thinking in terms of their strategy in being aggressive off season?
You mean, keep a guy because you
might be able to fix
the right hitting coach for him? No, I don't think so. I would hope not. I think that they're better evaluators of the players that they have than that. I think they know who they can sell relatively high on, who might not fit the picture, who might be redundant. So I don't think so. I mean, I think they have their guys who they planned on keeping regardless, and it's those guys they want to make sure they have the right guy for.
Is Bryce Harper's dad employed?
How about Chris Bryant's dad?
Well,
he's the hitting coach.
I'm hearing whispers that he's available.
Mike Bryant?
Yes.
When we evaluate this, Gordon, I'm trying to figure out how to word this. Who else was informed they're not coming back already, that we're going to find out in the next day or two? Or is it, was this a lone kind of firing?
Well, I'm not certain, but I think this is it. Brandon Hyde's applying and has interviewed for the Rangers managerial opening. Mm. But beyond things like that, I think this is it.
And you can't help but then wonder.
Unless,
who's being blamed? You see what I'm saying?
Coach and he doesn't want to work with the old assistant hitting coach, and they reassign him or something.
How do you think Joe's taking this news?
Well, this was his guy. So, you know, you're already talking about a manager who's entering the last year of his contract. So this is definitely is it definitely tied to that in at least that small way. This was a decision made above him. So I put it this way. I don't think we're going to spend all of May this year dismissing launch angle like we did last May.
What I find fascinating is, you know, everybody's trying to connect the dot. And you know, Michael Sneed breaks the news that Joe's restaurant has stalled and that there's no movement on his restaurant. Oh, well, you know, he's only got 1 year left. Now it's Joe's hitting coach is gone. Well, he's got 1 year left. At what point?
I read that, too. And
Do we connect any of that?
But that's – he was supposed – originally this was supposed to open for the start of the 2018 season. And just asking him about it in March, he said they put it off, and I didn't go into his damn restaurant too deep, but I was thinking the same. I wondered, well, what's the holdup if this was a commitment? So I don't know that's anything new right now that his restaurant hasn't opened on time, and I don't know all the details of why, but we knew in March it was being put off.
They were just deciding whether to put chili on the menu.
Oh, boy. This is rough.
Okay. It's pretty early for that.
Yeah. Hey, Mully started it. He started it with the tamale stuff. Come on, Gordon.
Yeah. The whole show's gone to hell, Gordon. I don't know what happened. David Ross is going to be interviewed. Well, let's rephrase that. Word is that they'd be interested. He's made a short list in Minnesota. I don't know that they've reached out or that they've arranged anything. But David Ross going to be interviewed, and that led to a lot of people wondering if, you know, shouldn't they bring him as a bench coach, sort of, you know, lady in waiting. I don't know where you're at with that. Do you think David Ross would make a manager?
Well, one of the reasons I brought up Eric Hinsky is because what keeps echoing in my mind is this complacency stuff that Theo talked about the day after the season ended so abruptly. And, you know, the idea that, you know, one game in April, one game in May would have made a difference. The idea that maybe you didn't have that killer instinct after getting the first two games of a series and not closing out the sweep and that kind of thing. Although I'm not sure how many of those there were this year. But when you start thinking like that, if that's already on your mind, then having, you know, looking for intangibles would be the next logical step. And when you start thinking of intangibles, I mean, that Hinsky was a guy that they liked as a clubhouse presence, as a guy that had been there before and that was a recent player who could identify with literally a teammate of one or two of the guys in the clubhouse at the time, former teammate. And so, you know, a guy like that or a guy like, I mean, the ultimate intangible guy was Ross. And so, so you start thinking in those terms, and I wouldn't be surprised at all. I wouldn't blink if they brought either one of those guys in as a coach. So that is definitely something to watch if Ross doesn't get hired as a manager somewhere.
All right. Sounds great. Appreciate it, Gordon.
Thanks, Gordon.
All right, guys. Take it easy.
Have a good weekend.
That's Gordon Whitmire. And Joe, you know, I'll make my share of stale jokes, but I don't ever not take responsibility. I don't point out someone else made the joke first. I thought it was stale joke day.
I thought my six-year-old son was in.
Thank you.
He started it.
If we all jumped off the bridge, David, would you jump in too?
Yeah, exactly.
I know. Maybe.
Be blaming me for your bad joke.
The bean joke was good. Is that what you're referring to?
See how hard I work? I had forgotten about that one. Thank you, Joe. We appreciate it. Wow. We got all sorts of people checking in on the text line. Everybody's got some complaints. Were we supposed to quiz Gordon about the Chris Bryant alleged turning down of a contract that everybody's denied? I mean,
that was more speculation than it was a report. That was more of a
we're changing
kind
it
of a guess, you okay. know, and you know, would you, and it was a discussion, would you trade Chris Bryant before he gets to the point where you
are
going
to lose
him? Trade
him at his lowest value? What could you get back if you gave away a guy that really should get a lot more for?
When your World Series window was still wide, wide open.
Is that on Chile? Is that also on Chile?
Chris Bryant's injury?
Yes.
Oh, well, did he
push
him?
I'm just wondering,
did he push
Who
him
knows?
Into first base when he decided to head first slide?
Stop using your swing. Swing this way.
It was Chile's idea to head first slide into first.
Listen, I you know, it's...
Let's blame everything on Chile.
It is a very... It's very interesting because I think we sit here and we talk about, you know, different elements. And, you know, you're not blaming a guy. It just didn't work out that, you know, the way you thought it would work out. Well, how is that not blaming a guy? You know, if you came to a conclusion that the way it was working out wasn't working, and then you had to fire the guy... There's a blame game involved there, whether anyone wants to admit it or not.
It is.
And you can say all the nice things. What a lovely fella. What a great guy.
You know what's interesting to me? He is a great guy. Everyone's a great guy after they get fired.
Exactly.
We've talked to two guys who are pretty plugged into the Cubs. Would you agree that Peter Gammons and Gordon Whitmire are pretty plugged into the Cubs?
Very much so.
And what did we talk about? And we asked kind of a version of the same question. Whose guy was Chili Davis?
Yes.
Peter Gammons said it was Theo's guy.
Yes.
Gordon said it was Joe's guy.
It's very interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
But I tell you, when you're here only for 1 year, and that shows you how much sort of strangeness surrounded the whole firing John Mayle and hiring Chili Davis.
Right.
He was hired because he was available. And so Mayle was spared because he couldn't. You know, because
Mayle, when they hired Chili, they made the point of saying that Mayle was only fired because Chili was available.
Yeah. It's kind of like he got Renteria.
Exactly. That's exactly what they said. So,
Chili was fired by Boston. Why was he in such high demand and regarded? I mean, look at the difference in Boston's offense this year and last year.
Who
the hell's Chili Davis?
That's the hard thing to get over. I mean, Boston's gone crazy, the numbers are absolutely unbelievable right now, especially in the playoffs. And I think part of it is because they scored 16 runs in a game and had to get a field position player. But they are right now in the playoffs batting .400 with runners in scoring position.
Yeah.
imagine if the Cubs had batted .400 with runners in scoring position. We wouldn't be talking about who's fired or who isn't. We'd be talking about them winning the World Series again. Those numbers, again, are inflated by that. But it is a very good example, Kevin. You watch that lineup, and they are creating runs. They are not just hitting bombs, right? The Yankees were hitting bombs all year long. They get into the playoffs. They get a couple guys on, and Giancarlo Stanton comes up. Oh, hit the bomb, and you get a three-run homer, and you're going to win, and we'll force a game. Never mind. So it's about scoring runs against great pitching.
That's
what it is. And how do you get there? And the Cubs thought that more contact hitting would get them there.
This also is Theo Epstein talking about complacency and trying to get rid of complacency and then backing it up. You had 40 games where they scored one or fewer runs. And what did he do to that? He's holding somebody accountable. He's replacing his hitting coach.
They do go through coaches, don't they?
Who got fired?
And then we sit here and we talk about Joe and his future and what's going to happen and all that. Well, you know, they do go through coaches. They go through managers and they go through coaches.
It's kind of like that list of Bears offensive coordinators we went through the other day. We could do that for the Cubs hitting coaches.
There's a high number of them, isn't there? 312-644-6767 is the telephone number. We're going to bring in a gentleman by the name of Joe Fortenbaugh. He is a guy that is going to help you with your investments. I don't know if anybody saw or not, but there were some unbelievable ratings for the NFL. Some of the top shows in all of television were NFL games, and I believe it was Todd Furman, who knows a little something about gambling, who just tweeted out a response to that that thing, just saying gambling question mark. Well, that's Joe Mully and Hall on the Score. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the Score. Joe Fortenbaugh is our man in Vegas by way of San Francisco, 95.7 the Game. And, of course, the Sharp 600 podcast. And, Joe, I don't know if you saw that or not, but apparently the highest rated shows are all connected to the NFL, and that's because the NFL now you can gamble on it. That's at least the conclusion of some of us.
Morning, Joe.
I plan on making my first bet this weekend.
Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure. I was thinking something because I always do a little additional Bears research before I come on. And somehow the Bears have ended up becoming like one of my favorite teams because we've been doing this hit for so long. I find myself following them and rooting for them. With them in Miami this weekend and having the loyal fan base that Chicago has that will travel to watch their favorite Suns play, is Miami like the number one travel destination for Bears fans? And if so, once Las Vegas gets the Raiders, will that be a better travel destination for fans who want to hit the road?
Could be. I think Arizona's up there, though, Joe. I think Arizona's a big one.
A lot of people from Chicago retire to Arizona, don't they?
Yes, absolutely. There's supposedly a million transplanted Chicagoans in the Phoenix area.
Bears-Cardinals games, though, feel like home games for the Bears.
But the Bears fans used to travel en masse to Tampa.
Yeah.
Tampa's a good time.
That's a big one. Yeah.
So, Tampa's a real good time. They got Burns Steakhouse. They got the Mons Venus. You know, we all know what we're talking about when we talk about Tampa. Let's not kid ourselves.
I didn't know you were going there.
Well, you know, it's sports talk radio, yeah, so I'm sure there are a few guys out there who know what I'm talking about.
I was on Radio Row at the Super Bowl down in Tampa one year, and they brought around girls from that place because they were very upset that they had changed some of the laws down there, and there was no contact or whatever it was, and it was like you're standing there like, what? It just happened. What? You know, it was. You know, I don't know. I've never gotten off a radio show before, like smelling like I had been in a brothel, but that was the effect. It was awful.
I living in Vegas, like the beauty of Twitter is how, for like sports gambling and coming on this show, you guys have really exposed me to a lot of great listeners. So a lot of these guys come onto Twitter, they ask about games. We have great discourse, and that's the upside to Twitter. But there is a dark side, and I remember living in Vegas. When a lot of people would be coming to town, they would ask my opinion on sports books, on steakhouses, all that good stuff. And then there would be that small sliver of society that needed me to, like, rank strip clubs and tell them about the different rules at the strip clubs. And it was like, all right, man, look, I can't be giving out. I don't want to be just – look, if you're looking for something in Vegas, you can find it. Don't come to me on Twitter. I'm not the guy for that. Come on. Just go ahead and lay the points.
Dark side of Twitter, Joe? Never.
Yeah, who would have thought that you could stumble into a cesspool conversation on Twitter? Yeah, here we are.
This segment with Joe Fortenbaugh was brought to you by Bet Chicago. For betting and fantasy football coverage, download the app today and bet for free. What do you got this week, Joe?
All right, let's start with college football. We had a nice little week in college football. I think we went 3-1, and then I threw out Georgia Southern as a bonus play. That hit as well. The college picks have finally come around, so let's see if we can keep it going. I'm going to take the 7 with Colorado over USC. That's a late game on Saturday night. Now, there are two things working in USC's favor. Number one, they're at home, which is obvious. And number two, they're coming off a bye. So they've had 2 weeks to get ready for this game, but I still don't see them as a very good football team under Clay Helton. Colorado, meanwhile, is better than it's been in years. They're 5-0 straight up. They're 4-1 against the spread. Their defense is giving up fewer than 19 points per game. These guys can make some plays. And not only that, this could very well be for the Pac-12 South Championship. The winner of this game could end up earning that. So even though USC's got the 2 weeks to get ready here, I'm going to take the points with Colorado. Like we always say on this show, if you're going to bet an underdog, you got to believe the underdog can win. You're not going to play it because you think the underdog can keep it close. You got to think the underdog can win if you're going to bet it. I think Colorado can win this game. I like him in this spot. We're going to take the Buffaloes plus the 7. Now, in a complete departure from what I just told you, it's going to be one of the squarest plays of the week, but I'm going to lay the 14.5 with Army at San Jose State. So this is a lot of points to lay on the road. San Jose State is in my backyard. They are miserable. The one thing they do really well is find ways to lose. You saw that last week. They were down 28-0 at the half. They came back to take the lead against Colorado State in the fourth quarter, only to go on to blow it. Army's had 2 weeks to get ready for this game, and take a listen to their last 3 weeks, right? In order, they went to Oklahoma and took that game to overtime, and then when they should have had a letdown spot the following week against an undefeated Buffalo team, they hammered Buffalo by 29 points on the road, and then they got a week off. Army is better than people give them credit for. I think they roll in this game against San Jose State. Game number three, I'm going to be at odds with a lot of people on this one. I'm laying 6.5 with West Virginia at Iowa State. Now, Iowa State, you guys know it, notoriously difficult place to go in and get a win. They are an upset machine waiting to happen, but they are off a big upset of Oklahoma State. They were 10-point dogs. They beat Oklahoma State outright. There's probably a little bit of celebrating going on. Meanwhile, this West Virginia team, for those who have been listening all season, we've been riding them quite a bit. We've been riding them, and we've been riding their overs. They play defense. That's the one thing that no one's giving Dana Holgorsen any credit for. Everyone looks at Will Grier in the offense. West Virginia can get some stops. They're undefeated. They're ranked in the top 10. They can smell the college football playoff. I'm not saying they're getting there, but they can smell it, and they're on the bye next week. So they're going to want to close the first half of the season as strong as humanly possible. That's why I like them. I like the mentality of West Virginia here versus the potential letdown for Iowa State off the upset. Lay the 6.5 with the Mountaineers. This next one would probably be ranked as my, I would say, the least confident, if that makes any sense. I'm going to lay 6.5 with California over UCLA. Now, with California just across the bay from me, I've been keeping a close eye on them all season. I like Justin Wilcox as a head coach. He's done tremendous things with this program, but they've lost their last two games. And that kind of has erased all the shine from their 3-0 start, but they're still a pretty good football team. They've just made a lot of mistakes with the turnovers. They've been killed with the turnovers. I think they can cut down on that in this game against UCLA. Chip Kelly has not won a game yet. UCLA looks terrible. College football looks like it has passed him by. His offense is averaging 18.4 points per game. I mean, these guys are brutal this season. Now, 6.5 may be a lot, but you got to remember, Cal's got plenty of motivation here. Last season, they lost this game by 3 points on a game-winning field goal. Big revenge spot here against the Bruins. Lay the 6.5 with Cal. And then the final play for college, New Mexico over Colorado State. New Mexico's a pick'em here. I like them to go to Colorado State and win. This is Colorado State's 7th straight game. They played that opening weekend at home against Hawaii. They were 17-point favorites. They got beat outright, and they got hammered by Hawaii in that game. It took them till last week to notch their 2nd win, and like I said, that was against San Jose State. They blew a 28-0 lead against the winless Spartans team and then had to come back late to win it in the 4th quarter. The quarterback from New Mexico is a transfer from Tennessee. This offense is averaging 42.2 points per game this season. And essentially, Bob Davie entered the year on the hot seat. He's making it really difficult for New Mexico's boosters to run him out. They're 3 games away from bowl eligibility. And when you look at the rest of the schedule, this is one they've got to have if they want to get there. So New Mexico in a pick 'em over Colorado State. The recap, Colorado plus 7 over USC. Lay the 14.5 with Army over San Jose State. Lay the 6.5 with West Virginia over Iowa State. Lay the 6.5 with Cal over UCLA. And then New Mexico in a pick'em over Colorado State.
That's a lot of faith in Bob Davie, Joe. But, hey, you never know. What do you got in the NFL?
All right, so here's what we're looking at. Game number one, Cleveland plus 1 over the Chargers. Chargers are coming across the country. It's an early start time. I don't trust them. This is a team I like to get to the Super Bowl before the season started. I know better than that. They've got talent. They just don't manage game well. And they're not disciplined. They are constantly making big mistakes in bad spots. But the reality here is how we view Cleveland. I'm as guilty as anybody of making Browns jokes. I've been doing it forever. It's such low-hanging fruit, and I get such pleasure out of it, especially here in the Bay Area with the Warriors always going against the Cavaliers, that sometimes I lose sight of what's happening. And I think that the bookmakers here are setting a line based on previous iterations of the Browns, rather than this year's version. For example, if the aliens came down from outer space and this is the only football season they've ever watched, Cleveland would not be viewed as a joke to them. They would not be a laughingstock like we see them. Just take this season on its own. Put it in a vacuum. They rank 2nd in the NFL in rushing and they're 1st in takeaways, and they should have won that game against the Raiders. This Browns team is better than people realize, and quarterback Baker Mayfield gets better each and every week. So the Chargers should be the better team here, but I'll take the Browns and the point to win this game. I'm going to lay the 2.5 with Seattle against Oakland in London. Look, the one thing Seattle does really poorly is protect the quarterback. The Raiders have the worst pass rush in the league. I don't know why that is. Maybe if they could, find a good pass rusher in the draft and then develop him and pay him, they might have some success down the road rather than trading him away to some team in Chicago. But that's neither here nor there at the moment. The thing is, they can't get out of Hughes at all. And that's how you stop Seattle. I think Russell Wilson and Chris Carson have big games here. This Raider team's terrible. I'll lay the 2.5 with Seattle. Plus, little known fact, the Raiders left last night for London. They didn't leave at the beginning of the week to get their bodies acclimated.
Wow.
They took a late Thursday night flight to London. So they got in really, I guess, I don't know, middle of the day, London time on a Friday. Good luck getting your body acclimated to that game on Sunday. Game number 3, I'll take the 2 with Pittsburgh over Cincinnati. Now look, Pittsburgh's been terrible this year, but every handicapper knows this matchup very well. Number 1, Pittsburgh is 18-7-1 against the spread in its last 26 games against the Bengals. Second, they're 16-4-2 against the spread in their last 22 games at Cincinnati. No matter what's going on with Pittsburgh, they always seem to have Cincinnati's number. I'll take the points with the Steelers. I like them to win outright. I'll take the 3 with Tennessee over Baltimore. I think this is your classic pros versus Joes. Tennessee looked awful at Buffalo last week. That's had an effect on the line. Now they're going to catch 3 at home. Good bounce back spot for the Titans. I don't like Joe Flacco on the road. Tennessee 5-0 against the spread last 5 home games. So to recap your NFL picks, take the point with Cleveland over LA, lay the 2.5 with the Seahawks over the Raiders, take the 2 with Pittsburgh over Cincinnati, take the 3 with Tennessee over Baltimore, and then those who like to play 6-point teasers, I'll probably tease Minnesota with Green Bay. It's nothing real scientific about that. I just think that Minnesota and Green Bay both get home. Arizona is not going to go to Minnesota and have a good game. They were +5 in turnover differential last week at San Francisco. Speaking of San Francisco, for as bad as the Packers have been, the Niners are brutal. They are the walking wounded. They got nothing left on that team this season to make any plays. I think Aaron Rodgers gets right in that game.
I just love the idea, Joe, that I've always been kind of half afraid of an alien invasion. But if they've just come for a football weekend, then I'm all for it. I don't blame them.
You know, as long as they're not watching Eli Manning, we should be pretty safe.
Great stuff, Joe.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Have a great weekend, boys. Love you, Chicago.
That's Joe Fortenbaugh from 95.7 The Game in San Francisco. And, of course, the Sharp 600
What
podcast.
Are the Raiders thinking?
Boy, I don't know. It's got to be difficult to watch. The latest thing I heard about the Raiders is they're getting ready to dump David Carr. Have you heard that?
Yeah.
Apparently his contract is Derek Carr, excuse me. I had the wrong Carr. The younger brother. They're getting ready. He's not playing particularly well, and they can get out of that deal, that big money deal they gave him. They can get out of that next year. And Gruden is a guy. He went through 9 quarterbacks down in Tampa. He just loves to get on to the next and
make trades.
Gruden's deal's coming up, though, right? He's almost out of contract.
10 years, $100 million. Okay. That's a pretty good deal. Yeah, he'll be there for a while. Wait till he hits Vegas. Then maybe he'll have to redo his contract. I don't know. Wally and Hall on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.